You're listening to Vatican Radio.
Each year on the 18th of July, we mark Nelson Mandela International Day in recognition of the former South African president's contribution to the culture of peace and freedom. For 67 years, Nelson Mandela devoted his life to the service of humanity. As a human rights lawyer, a prisoner of conscience, an international peacemaker, and the first democratically elected president of a free South Africa. The day, which falls on Mandela's birthday, was declared by the UN Assembly. It invites individuals to honour his leadership and his commitment to promoting social justice by taking action and making a difference in their communities. I asked the South African ambassador to the Holy See, George Johannes, who spent years as a political activist and in exile as a militant of the outlawed African National Congress before becoming part of the nation's first democratically elected government, to share some of his memories of Nelson Mandela, the man. Across the world, people mark what Nelson Mandela's birthday used to be, the 18th of July.
Yes, yes.
The UN has actually set it aside as Mandela Day.
Yes.
What does that say to you?
Well, I think it's a great recognition of the status of the person, but also the impact that he had. And I think also that one can see him as the modern day John Paul, the modern day Mother Teresa, Archbishop Romero, the people who did a lot in the service of humanity. And I think this is a recognition of Mandela as a person. I mean, apart from the Nobel Peace Prize that he won, but he's certainly someone who has been recognized internationally, and that is why the day has been set aside as a special day in remembrance of his memory. We also need to remember that next year it is 100th anniversary. So we certainly in South Africa are going to have a year-long series of events to celebrate his life.
And make sure that his legacy continues to live on.
Indeed, indeed. Because, you see, his legacy didn't just touch South Africa. It touched the whole of Southern Africa. It touched many people in the world. It touched young people, children, women, everywhere. And I think that's important for us because there is somebody that we can say we can take his life and mirror it in our own lives, but also in the country itself.
Also, in a world which is so bloodied by conflict as we speak, his example, there's no one else I can think of who made a peaceful transition happen the way he did. Someone to imitate.
Well, what's very interesting about his life is that as a student, he was quite a militant. In the 1940s himself and the young people of that time, they got rid of the old leadership of the ANC and they called them gentlemen with clean hands. And they said, we don't have time to sit down and just talk. We want action. And so, of course, in the 1950s, they introduced what was called the Defiance Campaign, which was part and parcel of the type of thinking that Mahatma Gandhi had thought of. We must remember that Mahatma Gandhi lived in South Africa for 21 years. So that philosophy was there. And so in the 1950s, they established the Youth League, and the Youth League was very powerful and influential. And already then there was the thinking that the government wasn't going to talk or want to talk, and that there must be the launch of the arms struggle. That only happened 10 years later because they still resisted resorting to violence. But in 1955, the leadership of the ANC were arrested, not just the ANC, but many of the other liberation movements. They were all arrested and put on trial for treason. And if you go back to the writings of Mandela and the court documentation, it was clear that he said, you know, I'm prepared to sacrifice my life if necessary for a democratic South Africa, for a South Africa free of racism, where there will be no black domination and no white domination. And then, of course, we know in 1960, 1956 with the adoption of the Freedom Charter, which was a very, very important document and which is still a sort of guiding document for the ANC leadership and so on. Then, of course, the massacre of Sharpeville happened in the 1960s. And then, of course, many people were shot dead in cold blood. Some were running away and they were shot in the back and so on. But I think what's important is to know that the decision to take the armed struggle didn't just come out of the blue. It was a thought-out issue. It was something that the leadership agreed only after a whole lot of frustrations with the government, who became more severe in their treatment and in their punishment of any opposition.
Absolutely. There were terrible years in South Africa.
Indeed. Then they decided that they should launch the armed struggle. Then, of course, the treason trial took place and they were all sentenced to life imprisonment. That was the 27 years that Mandela and his colleagues spent on Robben Island. The important thing to recognize of Nelson Mandela himself is what the struggle meant for him, what it did to him, and then what exile from his people meant, imprisonment meant. In a way, it was a form of martyrdom, because you don't lock somebody away on a remote island for 27 years just because they don't agree with your policies. You know, so there's those lessons that we can take from Nelson Mandela. But I think what is more important was the fact that he then had the opportunity with his colleagues on Robben Island to sit down and carefully map out the future. So whilst the government was looking at repression, they were thinking about the future and democracy. And I think if you read the life of Nelson Mandela in his book, Long Walk to Freedom, it's also another book which is very interesting, which is Conversations with Myself. Then you begin to understand the psyche of the person. He was very disciplined. He didn't kowtow to anybody. More so, he didn't kowtow to the regime. He didn't give up. He was a very disciplined person. He got up very early. He meditated. He exercised. And he wrote. And he had to go and do hard labor in the quarries of Robben Island. But at the same time, he was the leader of the group and had to go through the daily traumas of prison life, cold, deprivation of freedoms, and all sorts of things that happened to him. These things are all documented in his writings. But I think what happened was they could develop their strategic vision of post-apartheid South Africa, which the government at that time didn't even realize was happening. So that when Mandela was released, they already had, so to say, a blueprint for what South Africa should be based on the Freedom Charter, but how to implement it. And of course, we know the scenario that the apartheid regime went into a caucus and eventually they had a referendum to say, do the white people agree to us talking to the ANC? But I remember little snippets of it which said that when they first met the ANC leadership, they were shocked how well-educated they were, how freedom-loving they were. They thought that they were seeing communists with horns and tails and, you know, representing the devil, because that is how the Dutch Reformed Church at that time had made the ANC to look like, as well as the leadership of the ANC. And when they said, but these people are just ordinary South African people who love the country, they are patriots, unlike the person that they had thought he was. And so Mandela surprised everyone, he surprised even us. And I remember the first time he came to address the ANC youth. We were all in the armed wing. We were extremely militant. We had heard that the ANC was compromising. We were angry that the ANC was going to do that. We said we will fight to the bitter end. And of course, it took a long time to persuade people to accept the arguments put by the ANC leadership at that time. Some people still refused. But after a while, when people saw the benefits of us talking, because Mandela gave everybody the opportunity to say, there's a future for you in the new South Africa. And I think through all of that, the persuasion leading the ANC into the negotiations and bringing about change made him into something more special, because he said, I'm not a prophet. I'm here to be your servant. And in many ways, he became, if you want to say, the pastor of the nation. And in that sense, he fulfilled a historical mission of indicating to people that you don't have to carry your bitterness, your anger, your frustrations onto other people because of ethnicity. You don't have to do that. You can accept them. In fact, he went so far as to bend over backwards to engage with, but also to embrace the warders that treated them harshly. And in fact, one of them became very good friends. He had a sense of vision, which I experienced when I asked him one day, is this thing going to last? This peace that you are talking about so passionately, is that going to last? He said, look, you know, if we can turn over the other side of our personalities. He nearly echoed what St. Francis of Assisi said, where there is anger, let me sow peace. And, you know, St. Francis's prayer goes on and on like that. Yes. And that is the type of thing that Mandela already had. So I think that even the white minority in South Africa began to realize that it was worth their while putting in their efforts and their aspirations with Mandela. And that is why many of them even joined the ANC. The opposition party, the National Party, dismantled itself, and some joined the ANC, some joined the other parties that were there, and others formed their own parties. But this whole idea of reconciliation, of course, then took its own role. And we know that South Africa's had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And then, of course, you know, when Mandela became president, one of the big things that he did was the rugby team.
Yes.
He joined the rugby team, yes, on the grounds, and he actually wore the cap and he wore the jersey of the Springboks, which that year won the Rugby World Cup.
Right, it was, you know, amazing.
So, you know, you can say there are stories of great human suffering and tragedy, but there's also stories of great human successes and victories. And I think this is the legacy of Mandela and maybe the lessons from South Africa. And I believe now that he did all the right things. Like, for instance, when he first came into power, he created a government of national unity. And his understanding was that everyone, even if you've just got one member in parliament, has the right to have their view heard. And that is why, for instance, he had a religious father from the Catholic Church, as well as a religious nun in his cabinet, in the first cabinet that we had. But he also brought in people from the opposition into the government. And of course, we know that F.W. de Klerk, the former president, was made a deputy president. Mm-hmm. So he was able to do that reconciliation on a very practical level. And because he was that type of person, he could move mountains. And I think if we want to really, really talk about his legacy, what we should do is to remember all of these and to begin to say, so what can we take out of that? For us, we have introduced a day of action,
right,
on the 18th of July. And everybody is asked to do something for the nation. So people go out and they help the poor, they feed the poor, they go to the old age homes and they spend day with the old people, they take them out for walks, they do all sorts of things as a community thing for people. I'm going to do something next year. Unfortunately, I'm here too short a time.
Right.
But what I'm hoping to do is to organize a major memorial lecture based at the Vatican, the Holy See. And I would hope that the Holy Father would say the words of welcome. I think it should be a celebration. It should be something to say, let's celebrate, because when Nelson Mandela received an honorary doctorate from the London School of Economics, he was surprised at the end of his talk. He sat down and took questions and so on. And then they asked us to move to the side. And behind the curtain was a very famous singer that he liked very much. That was Joan on the Trading. She sang one of his favorite songs.
Oh, my goodness.
And he just stood up and danced. And all of us also stood up
in
and danced.
In true South African manner.
Exactly. The true Madiba way, as we call it.
The Madiba way.
He enjoyed himself. You could imagine the professors in the academic gowns swinging away on the stage, and the students, because the hall was packed, the students clapping and also singing along and so on, you know. So that was a nice surprise for him, you know.
So hopefully the event will be equally joyous.
Exactly. And I think we want to bring in a few surprises.
Perhaps you could get Joan Armour Trading back.
Hopefully we can. I think it would be. But, I mean, there are so many concerts that he attended where so many of the famous artists celebrated with us on Trafalgar Square,
course,
for instance,
of course, when
we had a concert, you know. And now we will have a concert to celebrate his life. So it will be that type of event. And we hope that we will have the participation of Romans.
We look forward to the next year, but yeah. On Tuesday the 18th, yes, we will celebrate, yes, Nelson Mandela,
yes,
Day.
Well, let me just tell you what the embassy to Italy is organizing, mm, yeah? Is there will be a big event which will be held in Reggio Emilia.
Yes.
And it will again be focusing on the issue of Nelson Mandela, you know, because the idea was to let everyone have a role to play in the celebrations.
Goodness, you know? Do you know why Reggio Emilia?
Because traditionally they were one of the strongest provinces that supported the anti-apartheid struggle.
That's interesting.
They gave Mandela the freedom of the city. They gave Oliver Tambo. And they were one of the first ones that signed, mm-hmm, cooperation agreements with the ANC.
Thank you very, very much, Ambassador. Yes,
thank you very much. And I hope that it would have given people a bit more idea of the type of person we really had as a leader, very powerful leader, icon.
That was the South African Ambassador to the Holy See, George Johannes.